Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and my goodness, we have got a subject matter today that is so fascinating. But more than that, it has, well, we'll tell you more about it, okay? So that you'll get it firsthand from Michael Bastine, who is one of the authors, along with Mason Winfield, of a fascinating book called Iroquois Supernatural, Talking Animals, and Medicine People. Michael, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Donna. It's a pleasure and an honor to be here.
Well, Michael, I was so intrigued with this. Not only was I intrigued with the title of Iroquois Supernatural, but the fact that you and Mason are both in New York, but there is a lot of research that went into this book. You yourself, Michael, are an Algonquin healer, an elder, and you were a student of a Tuscarora medicine man, Wallace Mad Bear Anderson. Boy, was he a character. And also a Tuscarora healer, Ted Williams. And then Mason is a supernatural historian. Now, what a title. I bet you when he was 3 years old, he never figured that that was what one he was going to be carrying. And he's the founder of Haunted History Ghost Walks. He's written 9 other books. And the two of you coming together the way you did, you've got to tell us how you met, how you interacted, and what made you decide that you wanted to write about the Iroquois.
Well, we met about 15 years ago. It was at I believe it was around Christmas time, and he happened to hear me telling a few stories to some folks that we kind of have as mutual friends in the area, and it caught his attention because they were not typical stories of just sitting around campfires. These were events that took place in the travels that I did with Mad Bear, and they were related to the culture, but they were things which typically you don't see or hear about in mainstream news stories, or even not too many people have written about the subjects that we have in the book. So that was about 15 years ago, and then he did his books locally and did more investigation. I think the more investigation he did, the more it kept leading him back to things that were tied to the people who lived in this region, who are the Iroquois. And that was what I think really got him going, was that they tied into the subject matter that he was researching. It just wasn't publicized anywhere. They had never really had anyone share some of the insights with someone from outside of the Iroquois. I'm not Iroquois, and I am Algonquin, and they do know who I am in this area. They also know that I always speak highly of them, and the reason why I have the Iroquois traditions is that I grew up here, and that was the influence that I picked up on. I didn't really get raised on the reservation. I was went to a public school, went to a little community college, but things just weren't clicking in that mainstream system. Something just kept telling me there's more to this life than what we're being told in the schools and what the mainstream is telling us. So in order for us to find out what's out there, nobody's going to come over to your house and say, hey, if you're interested, there's some unusual subject matter that's out there. Are you interested? So I had to take the initiative. A lot of it happened with meeting up with Mad Bear. That opened so many doors just being in his company and just traveling with him. So as the life started to unfold and the journey started out in this new part of life, I just said, wow, I said, I've never heard of any of these subjects. I've never seen anything spoken about this before. So as I observed, and I've been involved with the culture and these things probably about 35 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just been one of those things that as you live life, you start to hear about, and when things cross your path, if we don't investigate, if we don't pursue it, we're never going to expand our horizons if we're just happy with the same old, same old. So Mason decided it was time, and he said, there's a book in you. So we collaborated, and this is what came out. And it wasn't a real easy, because there is a lot of subject matter there, which we had to be, I told him, I said, I have to be very respectful of a lot of the things that the Iroquois people hold. And I said, it's not secret. I said, it's sacred. And mm-hmm. I said, and most people aren't sure what sacred really means. I said, they kind of think of those things as being secret. And I said, they're really not. I said, it is available, but I said, it just takes decades to be able to enter into these inner circles. And when you show yourself to be trustworthy and respectful, they open up, but it does not happen quickly or easily. So that's pretty much how it started out, and we really have been on a great journey, and that's why we'd like to share this book with people who may be experiencing things that they can't really explain, or things that have been kind of in their lives, but they want to know a little bit more to see if it's connected in some way. And what they're going to find out is that they are connected. It's just most of the mainstream does not want people to know these things, and it doesn't want them to be connected, because when you get connected, you begin to develop insight. And as you develop this insight, you start to be able to tell the things that are real and the things that are an illusion. And when you start experiencing the things that are an illusion, but so many people want to buy into it, they want to hold on to it, they actually manifest the illusion. And then you find out that we really don't have to do that. If we want to be true and honest with this life and with ourselves, we can do that. And if we do it in a respectful way, it'll be unbelievable the things that will open up for the people who are experiencing this time that we are going through on the planet right now.
I agree. Now, for those people that are not aware of the Iroquois, I'm sure everyone listening has heard about the tribe of people. However, it was not just a tribe. The Iroquois actually were six nations, and there was a time, and your history in here is just fascinating, that there was a time period when everybody was battling with everybody else. I always get such a kick out of people that seem to think that the Indians never fought with each other. Boy, was that a joke. I mean, there were all kinds of things going on. These were people that were eventually, though, brought together into six nations, and their influence on American history has been mentioned more than once, especially as a model for democracy, for the republic that we have here, and as a political body. And when you say that, people would just go, oh, you just don't know what you're talking about. They weren't political, they were just Indians. People's ignorance regarding various tribes and peoples that were in North America long before Christopher Columbus ever put his toe on this property here, they have been around for a long, long time.
That's true. And one of the interesting things that you have mentioned here is that They started out, the Iroquois started out as tribal people, but as they evolved and as they had encounters with messengers and people from higher planes, they actually converted and became nations. And that was the difference that sets them apart from all of the other, because the Algonquin people, which are my people, surrounded the Iroquois. But the Iroquois were unique in the sense that they devised and formatted their structure of government with a spiritual base. And the spiritual base was directly connected to the creation. So their stories and their legends integrate elements and components that are real of this planet and during the time of this creation that substantiate, and that's what established what and who they are. And that was the part that really interested me, because I said, you know, we hear a lot about Hopis and many of the other native tribes that are out there, but none of them had a formatted style of organized government which worked. And in fact, the history as it gets told, the way the Iroquois people tell it, is really interesting. It's nothing the way I ever heard it in school. And they talk about how there were attempts to set up an American government or some form of government, and how it continued to fail. And they tell you that the first attempt was made in New York City. It was the Continental Congress. It was basically an imitation of the Whigs and Tories. That fell apart. They moved a little further south. They tried in Philadelphia. The interesting thing about Philadelphia is Washington had just made treaties with the Delaware people. And unfortunately, he didn't keep his words with them. And by not keeping his word with those people, there's a medicine woman who stopped right at his feet, and she looked him in the eye, and she said, because of you not honoring and living up to the words that you agreed to make with our people, she said, your great bell of liberty will ring once and break. And he didn't. He just ignored it, and he motioned to have her moved along. Well, most people don't realize, they do know that once and then break, but they also don't know that the woman is on a statue on the top of the Capitol building.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
And that's who that is. It's a Delaware medicine woman, and she is on the top of the Capitol building because they were so impressed with how they were beginning an alliance with the Iroquois, but they were impressed with the way she addressed things, and they really felt they needed to honor her. And that's who that is on the top of the Capitol building. Well, when that attempt went into chaos, they went. Washington sent a delegation. In fact, the people who have all signed saying that they were the creators of the Constitution, those were the people, the delegation, that went up to visit the Iroquois. And they wanted to find out how the Iroquois occupied such a large territory and what was the basis. How were they able to do this?
Fascinating stuff. Now, you have among the Iroquois, you have the Seneca, you have the Cayuga, you have the Mohawk, and they were considered great peacemakers, the Tuscarora. You also have the Oneida, and there's just so much about the different parts of the groups. But let's go into about the religious and the spiritual side here, because one of the points right in the beginning of your book that you make is that the Iroquois are mostly Christian now, but they're very, very cautious about sharing any of the traditional supernatural natural patterns that they have, or rituals or customs or I'll use the word tradition again. And the reason being is that they're very respectful of that, regardless of what Christian association they may have, and they don't want to be stomped on. And what came into my mind was the Hawaiians, the kahunas. When the Christian missionaries went over there and were trying to convert everybody, they found that the Hawaiians had healing modalities and rituals and knowledge they couldn't even begin to fathom. So all of it went underground. And it's still that way today, because there are old blue laws that are still in effect in Hawaii and in the islands. So I find this as a pattern that's repeated itself over and over again through different cultures. And it's not a surprise to me, but I was fascinated with a story about Handsome Lake, who was considered a prophet among the Iroquois. Tell us a little bit about him.
Yeah, well, you know, that Handsome Lake story is really interesting because he was one of those people who was not only critical and crucial to maintaining and setting up their Confederacy, but this fella had an experience which is rarely talked about. I've only seen one account that's in a book that was done by a Mormon woman back in the late 60s and early 70s. And this individual, he went into a coma at one stage of his life, and they were ready to prepare him. They thought he had died, but they saw that he still had life in him. But they were preparing for his funeral. And after the third day, he woke up out of this coma state. And he told the people that he had visited with another being on the Sky Trail. And he said, this being told him, he said, you'll have more success with your people than I had with mine. And it almost, I guess if you wanted to make a leap there, you could almost say that he may have met Christ on the other side and had a conversation with him during those 3 days. But when he returned, he brought this information back, and he also gave them this insight that said, what we have here is not just a model, but it's sacred. And we want to share this, but we have to be careful because there are people who will want to take part of it and they won't use the way it's supposed to be used. They will only use a portion of it. And in order for this, actually, government, if you've ever heard the words, I mean, we hear them repeated time and time again, for the people, by the people, for the people. Those words were never formulated on any other part of the planet. Every other government seems to have had either a military or royal family or some other way that they started to form their governments. And this was something unique. And by them referring to it as really a democracy, it really isn't a democracy by the definitions that they're using, because what the Iroquois used, it was much more things of consensus, but they kept in mind constantly, this is something that we are trying to implement to please the Creator, keep ourselves organized, not damage our environment, not interfere with the life around us, but be respectful for everything in this life that they are going to encounter. And unfortunately, those portions of it, and along with that, they didn't bring in the clan mothers, because the Iroquois are a matriarchal society. And the clan mothers are the ones that actually have the higher power. They're the ones that present the position to the men to be a chief, because they observe as they're growing up that they have qualities that are what they call leadership qualities. And those were the people who actually put the chiefs in place.
Interesting.
So when you start seeing all of these things that aren't being done in the way that they borrowed some of the Iroquois teachings, you start to see why they're having the problems they're having.
Well, they tried to take the old and just mix it right in, and it's sort of the story of putting new wine into old wineskins. It's just not going to hold. It just can't do it because you have a whole different composition with what has been made. Just fascinating stuff. Now, you go into a section which surprised me, and that was that the Iroquois had a strong belief in witches. And I thought that was a modern term. What was their term? Was it did they actually call people witches? Because it seemed like there were male witches and female witches.
Well, these days, that's what they refer to those people. But in earlier times, you'll hear terms referred to as warlocks and charlatans and people who had learned some sacred ways but started allowing the ego and the human element to interfere with how that practice was being utilized. And some of them became quite powerful. But the problem with when you start taking something sacred and think that you're going to use it to oppress or interfere or disrupt other human beings with it, it has this energy that you have to be very careful with because you don't control that energy. That energy can turn on you. And what they have found is that in every instance, when someone tries to take a sacred energy, a sacred element, and use it in a disruptive or harmful way, it always comes back on them.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, it always comes back on them because there are practitioners that are out there that know this is not what it was designed for, this is not how it was to be used, and when people start to practice and use it for their own personal gain or for jealousy, or there's so many reasons why someone may think they need to do what they're doing, it's because they're short-sighted and they haven't held on to the insight to why they have this ability to work with that energy. And they lose that concept. They lose that insight that says, wait a minute, if you take this and you use it improperly, you do know that it runs the risk of coming back on you. And most people think, oh, no, not on me. I know how to take those precautions. Well, it's like having the tiger on a leash, and you go, how are you going to keep them from coming after you? And you see, they don't want to recognize that this energy is something to be used in an honored and used in a sacred way. And when you begin to share that with, and this is what those inner circles do, they are still in practice, they are still in existence. You'll hear some people claim that everything that they had, the inner circles are gone, they don't exist, and that's not true. They are very careful about handing it to people who they trust, and not only trust, but they know that this is their very existence of their future. If they don't handle it properly, if they turn this over to just anybody, it will be their demise. So the few that are still practicing are very careful about who they share with and what they share with these people.
I found that in just about every culture that I have encountered, those that are the keepers of wisdom, that's the terminology I will use, the keepers of wisdom, they're very discerning because they feel that as guardians, and usually there's not a big to do about them. They will be very quiet. As you say in your book, the steady lives of selfless good is not a sexy thing. You're not going to be on the front of People magazine. And they really are low-key. And they walk the walk. They talk the talk. But what they do is look for the qualities of commitment and dedication. And it was many years ago, I met a young man, and he was in his 30s. And he had been chosen by his tribe out of Canada, and I don't remember the tribe he belonged to. And he said, they told me I was to be a custodian of the wisdom that was to be passed down, and he didn't want to have anything to do with it. They told him this when he was a teenager, and when I met him when he was in his 30s, he said, I fought this like you wouldn't believe, and finally he had acquiesced because he realized that's what he needed to do. He was the keeper of visions. He was the one that had to learn about the medicines and traditions and everything. And he had been in training, and he was in his early 30s already for approximately 11 years, and he said he was far from being ready to take over the responsibility. So this was something that was over a period of time. And your mentor, Mad Bear Anderson, tell us a little bit about him, because he was a keeper of wisdom, and he passed away in 1985, but he was a very special man to you, and also, you know, to a Mason when he had a chance to find out about it. So tell us about Mad Dog.
Yeah, Mad Bear was...
Or Mad Bear, I'm sorry.
Yep, that's okay. I've heard that slip of the tongue many times. And it's just because of the context of which people think of. But Mad Bear was this incredible human being that he had this huge part of compassion. But I also saw another side of him that said, boy, don't ever cross this guy. Because he didn't get angry, but he could shut things down so strongly that you would just not imagine that you would want to be on his bad side. And just observing that, and I mean, it was not something of fear, it was more respecting that this was a guy who was stepping forward. He was bringing the traditions back out into the open, and he was probably one of the first to do that. Not the first, but one of them, back in the late 50s. And what he was able to do was reunite so many of the Iroquois people. Because over time, they would go through the motions, but they never really had this catalyst, this component that would rise up and challenge them and say, where's the clan mothers? We need the clan mothers to become involved again. We need their involvement, and we need them to assist us to get ourselves back up on our feet and stand for the things that we have shared in the past. And I had never seen or heard Mad Bear get stumped by any situation that he had encountered. I spent about 8 years with him before he passed.
Mm-hmm.
And I just saw so much ceremony, so many interactions, and he would not hesitate to share with non-natives. He was very cautious about how much he would reveal, and it would take years for someone to get close to Mad Bear. But he was really someone that he came back to the Iroquois people to really assist them to reestablish what they had already once had, and it just kind of got fragmented, and people were not really interested, but he knew that the time that he was on the planet, he needed to just reawaken these people and get them to see that this was a part of this life that reconnects us. It gives us this drive and this insight in a sacred way, not in a way of revenge or retribution or anything that would be on the human element, a response from the human element, but on the spiritual side. And that's the kind of human that he was. He was just one of these great people that when you met him, you just liked being in his company.
You have a wonderful story in here about a 92-year-old woman, and he helped to cure her, but the intimacy of communication and conversation between he and this woman, him and this woman, was just wonderful. I know, Michael, that we're just about out of time here. The book, Iroquois Supernatural, the title doesn't really do justice to the content that's inside of it. And I think that you and Mason have done such a wonderful, wonderful job of being able to bring forth information about a wonderful people, about the diversity within the Iroquois Nation itself, the historical associations, the information about their medicine, their various healers. You've got a story in here about an 11-year-old who was a phenomenal healer. And just, it was a mystic and a healer. And 11, he was doing the work. I mean, the stories just go on and on and on, and they're absolutely mesmerizing. Michael, do you have a website?
I don't, but Mason does. And if people would like to make contact, I refer them to Inner Traditions, the publisher of the book, because I appreciate my privacy. And I've been trying to keep this from disrupting the family too much. So they can make contact through the publisher or through Mason's website, and he does forward me information. I hesitate to give it. I do have an email address, but I just hesitate because we get so many responses that I work a full-time job and trying to keep the family doing family things. So it's quite a juggling act. I've never experienced this kind of a part of life yet, and I'm still trying to adjust to it. But
all right. Well, I do know, Michael, we are out of time. Your book is awesome. For those of you listening, you can check out BearAndCompanyBooks.com, BearAndCompanyBooks.com. And the title of the book is The Iroquois Supernatural, Talking Animals and Medicine People. There is just so much in here that we just barely scratched the surface. So if you're intrigued with real information about a phenomenal people, the Iroquois, you will be mesmerized by this book. This is Donna Sebo. Thank you so much, Michael Besteen, for being with me. We're going to take a break. We're going to be back just after this.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are now open. Toll-free number, if you'd like to call in and chat with me directly, is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. 627-6008. And all I need from you is your first name or your initial, and I will then tell you what I perceive. And, of course, you're always welcome to ask me about anything that is of significance to you. So, again, 888-627-6008. I wanted to share a story with you, and this is about the kahunas of Hawaii. And if you were listening to the interview, at one point during the interview, I had mentioned to Michael that there was a section in his book about the Iroquois and how they were very private about their belief systems, even though many of them had converted to Christianity. They still have this cultural knowledge, which was around centuries before Christianity ever came into the picture. And they hold on to that. And as I mentioned, I have known many different cultures that have done the same thing. Well, in Hawaii, there was a man, and there's a museum named after him, Dr. Brigham. Dr. Brigham was of that generation, late 1800s, early 1900s, and this is a man who was extremely well-educated and was intrigued the time when he was living of how the old kahunas were able to do things that, as a Western scientist, they didn't have a hope or a clue about how it happened. They knew how to utilize energy. They were very familiar with being able to make energy work in a way and manner that quantum physicists would love to have one of them tell them about today. I'll tell you the rest of the story when we come back. We've got a caller on the line. I want to welcome to the caller to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling in from?
My name's Richard, and I'm calling in from Wisconsin.
All right, Richard, welcome. And something that's coming right into my mind is you need to keep your facts straight. There is something about your emotional nature being pushed into the wrong direction. I guess what I'd say is someone's pushing your buttons, and you're going to emotionally respond, and that is going to interfere with the clarity of thinking that you need. So if I could encourage you to keep in mind, always have your facts. As much as your emotional nature will be triggered and ready to flow into action, it's going to cause a lot of distortion. So you must have the facts. You must know really what is around a situation, what is the reality of what's being dealt with, because if you do that, you won't get yourself into emotional hot water. More than that, you will be respected and known by others for that quality. And your intuitive capacity will operate a lot more comfortably if you pull yourself in and you don't push things by the emotional urge that is going to be hitting you quite hard. I'm intrigued with the fact that you've got a number of different issues that seem to be getting regurgitated. And I use that word very thoughtfully, but this has something to do with old stuff. And it's as if something was not finalized or finished, and so old memories, old circumstances, old agitations will come up, and you'll go, where is this coming from? I thought that I had closed this, put it away in my mental file cabinet, and here it is being stimulated. Well, there are a few loose ends, but it won't take you much to put them into place. But you've got to be alert to this, because part of this is what I call the old self that's going through the death throes. And in going through the death throes, it's going to kick up a lot of dirt. It's like, no, you've got to keep me alive. And so it's just a part of your conscious self. You have to say, no, this has an appropriate place, and I'm going to put it where it belongs. So any loose ends that are floating around, and there aren't a heck of a lot that I'm seeing in your life, you're going to be able to put them into their proper place, anchor them down, so that they're not going to be affecting you. But you've got a pretty intense year here. You've got a lot going on, and so you cannot afford to procrastinate and put things off. You really need to pay attention to detail. What would you like to ask me today?
Yeah, you've kind of gone around some of it. Last February 14th, I had what I would call a rebirth, and one of the things I did is I bought a guitar, and I started to learn to play it, and so I wanted to see if you see that going anywhere, and can you tell me who's around me? Because when I'm playing, I regularly feel somebody touching my hand. I've heard my name several times, a single clap on occasion, and somebody sitting down beside me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I honestly am not getting a name at this time, and I think you called in a couple of days ago or a few days ago regarding this, and I think we weren't able to discuss it for very long because the airtime was finished. But regardless, what I am looking at, Richard, I'm not getting a whole bunch of information about this person. I'm actually seeing two people. I'm seeing a male, and I'm also seeing a female. So I don't see that they are related to you, but I think the female you have known, and she passed over at a relatively young age, but I don't know how well you knew her. You knew her, but you didn't know her really well. And I think she just liked you. She had a lot of trust in you. And I think she's being very supportive. But the person that you feel touching your hand or calling your name is someone that, again, you have known. It reminds me of a teacher, someone that has said, well, I met you, we crossed paths, and this is a mature individual that I'm looking at, and someone that really enjoyed interacting with younger people. And though you are a mature male, this individual feels like you are a young student, which in reality you are, because this is something you've just started recently. But they really want you to continue your practice. And I think what it does for you, it creates an altered state of mind that allows you to be a clear receiver. So when you're having these sensations of being touched, what you want to do is ask the individual to show you how you can identify them and thank them for being supportive of you. There's no harm that's going to come from either one of these individuals. And before you start playing your music, you really ought to ask for the highest and the best. And I think sometimes because of the fact that the music puts you into an altered state, I would encourage a prayer of protection, something that you would say can be very simple and doesn't have to be complicated, that only the highest and best is going to be expressed through you. And I think that you're going to have a lot of benefit from the music. I think it's really going to affect you in a very, very positive way. So keep it up.
Yeah, the teacher could actually be my old music teacher when I was in a group called Highlander Bands, Mr. Jolivet. He, mm-hmm. he passed away, but he was always very, very nice to me. He said I had a natural talent.
Mm-hmm. Well, whoever this man is, he loved teaching. He absolutely loved teaching and loved teaching younger people. So in his mind, anybody that has a love of the music that he's known, I think he would be very supportive of. And I think that should he be the one, you're going to really have a nice association, a very nice association. He won't stay around you forever, but he'll be around you for a while until you really feel self-confident. And then I think he'll move on to another student.
Yeah, that sounds like my old teacher.
Well, Richard, I thank you so much for calling.
Anybody?
Excuse me?
Okay, thank you.
You're very welcome, Richard. We had a little bit of a time delay there. This is Donna Sebo. When we come back, I'll finish the story about Dr. Brigham and another fellow, Max Freedom Long, and the Kahunas. But if you want to give me a buzz, call me at 888-627-6008. We're going to be right back.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you want to chat, 888-627-6008. Now, for those of you in Western Washington, I want to let you know about a class that I and an associate, Robert Newman, who's an expert in feng shui, are going to be doing on Saturday, November the 12th, from 10 in the morning, that's a Saturday again, 10 in the morning until 2 in the afternoon. Now, this workshop is all about empowering you and your life. You're going to be able to see how you can develop and utilize your own intuitive skills, however they may operate, as well as create a physical environment of harmony that supports your deepest creativity and desire for success. Now, you'll be given tools to work with on a daily basis that are easy to use. And each of us, I will be doing a class segment, and then Robert will be doing a class segment. And there will be question and answer time, and we also are going to have refreshments that are going to be served. So this environment is absolutely beautiful. Now, again, the date is Saturday, November the 12th. The event location is Bridgeport Place. The address is 5250 Bridgeport Way West. Time, 10 a.m. until 2 p.m. Doors will be open at 9:15 in the morning for registration. Admission is $39.95 if it's prepaid, or $45 at the door. And all you need to do, if you want to find out more information about this workshop, if you want to attend, or if you have a friend that wants to come, give me a call at my office, 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604. Or email me at donna@delphiinternational.com. donna@delphiinternational.com. This is going to be a power-packed class. I can't tell you how much it means to me to be able to do this, and Robert is just absolutely awesome with his expertise with feng shui. In fact, if you bring a photograph of a room that you want to work with, he'll tell you what you can do. Okay, Donna Sebo here, 888-627-6008. If you want to chat with me, I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Dr. Brigham, and also Max Freedom Law. Now, I was telling you about Dr. Brigham in the beginning and how he had a respect for the kahunas of Hawaii. Well, he was taken out to a volcano. I'll give you an example of what he experienced. And they told him that they could walk on the lava without being burned. Now, this is not unlike fire walking. But how many people today would even consider that? I mean, anybody that's been around volcanoes or even is doing research with them, realize that you can have on the toughest, best pair of shoes and your soul will literally be eaten away by the heat. Well, Dr. Brigham was taken on a certain route, and he had on hiking boots with real thick soles. And they put a particular leaf from a tree, and they did a ritual, and they put these leaves on the bottom of his boots, and he said, "What in the world are you doing?" And they just laughed at him. But they were able to work with energy in such a way that he was able to walk along on hot lava and His boots burned away, but his feet didn't get burned. The leaf was on the bottom of the shoe, and consequently, his feet came in touch with the leaf eventually when the shoes were eaten through. And he said these people did things like this, and it just amazed him. Well, he had a protege. Max Freedom Long was a young college student that was able to work with Dr. Brigham. And Dr. Brigham said to him, you need to know that there are laws of nature that these people have learned how to use. They work. This is not woo-woo. He said, it's not make-believe. This is real. I don't know how they do it, but you will be able to find out. When Dr. Brigham passed his mantle on to Max Freedom Long, Max Freedom Long got involved with a great deal of research and ended up discovering certain techniques, and you can go and check out his books. The one they were so well known for is The Secret Science Behind Miracles. But the Conas could heal. They could do all kinds of things. And Dr. Brigham was labeled as a kahuna by the old Hawaiians because he learned how to utilize these laws. And our guest, Michael Baston, when he was talking about the Iroquois and talking about if you have a knowledge of how to do certain things and you use it in an abusive way, it's going to come back and it's going to affect you. Well, that is what happened with Dr. Brigham when he was on an expedition, where he and some Hawaiians were going to a particular area to do some research, one of the other islands. And they had stopped at a particular location, and there was a young boy that went with him, that went with them, who was about 12 years of age. Now, this young boy, after they arrived at their location, started becoming quite ill. And Dr. Brigham examined him and said, well, there's nothing really wrong with him. Well, the Hawaiians told him, there's nothing really wrong with him, but there has been a curse put on him by the kahuna of the village that he comes from. So they proceeded to tell Dr. Brigham the story about how this kahuna did not want the boy around Dr. Brigham and didn't want him to leave the village, and consequently put a mindset into this young boy's mind that he was not going to be well. And he was sending energy to totally dominate and to literally kill this boy. So when Dr. Brigham learned about this, he said, well, what are we going to do? And the Hawaiian said, well, you're a kahuna yourself. He said, what do you mean I'm a kahuna? He said, yeah, you're a kahuna. You're going to have to send the energy back to the kahuna that is forwarding it to this boy. So this is what he did. He put the boy in a place where he was safe, and then it was as if he was talking to this old kahuna, and he summoned up all this emotional energy. And he was telling the kahuna, and this is my rendition, that he did not have the right to injure this boy, and he was sending all of this dark energy back to him. Well, Dr. Brigham worked himself up into quite an emotional state and made his declaration that the boy was not going to be harmed and that all of this negative energy was going to be returned to the sender. So all of a sudden, the little boy wakes up, so to speak, and his eyes are bright, and he feels good, and he turns around. He's no longer sick, and he had been quite ill. Well, they finish their expedition. They end up taking the young boy back to the village. And when the villagers saw the young boy come back, there was tremendous commotion. Dr. Brigham found out that the kahuna that had sent all of this negative energy to kill the child, he had not protected himself, and when Dr. Brigham sent it back to him, it killed him. The kahuna was killed on the exact day that Dr. Brigham, and about the same time of day that Dr. Brigham was doing his kahuna chant, if you will, and it showed Dr. Brigham that there was more to life than you realize. And the people of the village, in many ways, were very grateful because this kahuna had not been a particularly nice personality. But that's recorded. That's a part of Max Freedom Long's history, and it's in one of his books, so you might find it interesting reading. Oh, my goodness, we're out of time. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Tomorrow we're going to be talking about antioxidant overkill with Dr. Randolph Howes. You're not going to want to miss this. It's a great show. This is Donna Siebel. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Same time, same place. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. Talk to you then. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Siebel Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.